And when I was invited to go to South Africa to speak, it was on the 10th anniversary of Nelson Mandela's release from prison in South Africa, in Robben Island. And I went to Robben Island off the coast of Cape Town. And I went to the cell, and I went to the place where Nelson Mandela was imprisoned for 27 years. It was a very, very long time. And he was out there in the limestone quarries. I went out into the limestone quarry and just tried to imagine what it was like for 15 minutes to break limestone. And that sun was so bright against that white, white, white limestone that my eyes, I could hardly open them, and they were squinting so badly. And I imagine what it must have been like for him to do that year after year. When you see Mandela, you see that he can hardly open his eyes. They're like little slits from having squinted for so long. And his only crime was that he was black. He was a lawyer. And he was protesting this system called apartheid. When Mandela came out of prison in Robben Island, 1990 or 91, he came out with two things in his heart. From going deep within and being quiet, reconciliation and forgiveness. And in the process of implementing those spiritual ideas, he was able to prevent perhaps what would have been a major, major holocaust of slaughter and murder in that country, just through his example. He became the president of a democratically elected country in that country of South Africa just a few short years after his release because of his consciousness. Mandela inspires me. And there are many other stories of inspiration of people who have inspired me by going into their source. But one I'd like to share with you here is one that is very personal with me. Let me just read you an account about someone. Back in 1942, when I was 2 years old, my mother was left to take on the responsibility for raising my two brothers, ages 3 and 5, and me alone. My father, of whom I have absolutely no recollection, literally walked out on his family and never once placed a phone call to see how we were doing. He paid no child support since he spent a great deal of time in trouble with the law, including some jail time for being a thief. He simply walked away and never looked back. After I was born, my mother brought me home to their tiny apartment on the east side of Detroit and discovered that my father had left my 16-month-old brother Dave in the care of my 4-year-old brother Jim and had temporarily moved in with a woman in Ann Arbor, some 40 miles away. Try to imagine the scene. It's 1940. A depression has left almost everyone economically bankrupt. There are no government programs to aid the support of 3 children under the age of 4. An alcoholic husband refuses to work, steals money from everyone, and regularly chooses the company of other women, leaving his wife to care for their 3 babies. An anemic infant needs medical assistance, which is largely unavailable to anyone living in poverty. Yet out of this seemingly hopeless scenario emerged a woman who had a dream that her life could and would get better. After finally going through the divorce, my mother was totally on her own. She worked first as a candy girl at a 5 and dime store and then as a secretary for the Chrysler Corporation. And her earnings came to approximately $17 a week. She was forced to place Dave and myself in a series of foster homes supported by the Methodist Church while Jim moved in with her parents. Her nightmare was realized. Her family had been split up, and the thought of this being a permanent condition was too devastating for her to contemplate. But she held a vision for herself that she never, ever abandoned. Somehow, someday, I will unite my family and raise my boys under one roof. Unfortunately, times were challenging and the years passed. Mother visited Dave and me whenever possible. She didn't have an automobile or even a driver's license, and the distance to Mount Clemens, where we resided, was approximately 17 miles. But it might as well have been 7,000 miles, since there was no transportation or money to pay for her to get there. But my mother was determined. She even married a man she didn't love as a way to unite her family. In 1949, our family moved into a tiny, and I mean tiny, duplex on the east side of Detroit. Like our father, our new stepfather was also an alcoholic and an irresponsible provider. Drinking became his escape, and frequent hostile interchanges were his norm. But mother, who refused to see her boys separated again, continued to work, work, work. Every morning she was up at 5 a.m. making breakfast and packing lunches for her three growing boys. She took three buses to work and three home every day, standing outside on those endless freezing winter mornings and returning home at 5:45 p.m. in order to prepare an evening meal. My brothers and I all had paper routes or were stock boys, but the hard work fell on the shoulders of this never complaining, always cheerful woman. Every weekend looked like this for my mother: washing endless loads of clothes and hanging them on the line to dry, making breakfast, lunch, and dinner, ironing down in the basement on Sundays. The work never ended. Yet this woman was the most joyful, loving, beautiful soul to be around. All my brothers and my friends came to our house to hang out because of my mother. They loved her, and more than that, they loved being in our home because of the energy she brought to it. This woman lived from spirit and offered all of us inspiration. Not one of us would ever have even considered talking back or even being disrespectful in any way. She commanded our respect, but she never demanded it. And with all the responsibilities she had, my mother never left the house with her hair in curlers or her clothes in disarray. She took great pride in herself, and through her example, she taught my brothers and myself to do the same. While going through a second divorce from a now out-of-control alcoholic, she never abandoned her role as a mother to all of us. In later years, when her own mother was quite sick, I watched in astonished admiration as she took on the sole responsibility for caring for her mom, despite the fact that she had four siblings. And then, wonder of wonders, as my ex-stepfather reached a stage where his alcohol and smoking addictions were taking their final toll, I watched in amazement as she cared for this man who had largely mistreated her throughout their marriage. She went to his home, did his laundry, called for medical help, visited him in the hospital, and extended love where she had received only mistreatment and even abuse. Today, mother approaches the age of 90. And still bowls twice a week, lives on her own, and never complains. To this day, she won't leave home unless she's dressed to her high standards of appropriateness and her hair is beautifully coiffed. She respects herself, and this esteem has trickled down to me, her youngest son, and my two brothers as well. Now she has three boys who are all eligible for Social Security and Medicare. Yet still, she lives and breathes that loving spirit. I'd like to say these beautiful words to my mother. What I meant to say was, how can I possibly say goodbye to the person that was the first to hold me, the first to feed me, and the first to make me feel loved? From a distance, I watch you move about, doing the mundane tasks that to everyone else seem so routine. But for me, the tasks you lovingly completed year after year built and reinforced the foundation, the structure that made my world a safe and comfortable place to grow. All that I am and all that I have can be traced back to you. Whatever accomplishments I have made along the way would not have occurred without first believing in myself. And you were the first person who always believed in me. Now, with a family of my own, I'm amazed at the number of times I hear your words flow from my mouth. This ventriloquistic phenomenon was at first most irritating, but now warms me as I've come to understand that there is a part of you that will live on in me forever. When time parts us, I pray that you will reach across from the other side to again touch my face and whisper into my ear for your warm and gentle presence in my life. For this, I will always be thankful. Yes, Mother.
You inspire me. Thank you.
We've talked about being inspired. We've talked about inspiration being something that you can deliver to other people. What are the qualities and characteristics of being a provider of inspiration?